From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the summer of 2015 when a local artist had a vision for one of the most impoverished neighborhoods in Rochester. And not just Rochester, one of the roughest neighborhoods in the country by many measures. Poverty, crime, single parenthood. Sean Dunwoody created the Fruit Belt Project. And now a new film shows us how he worked to put together a team to transform this neighborhood with art. Sean knows a little something about how art can improve lives. He has lived it. Been thrown out of school. He's been in that world of drug dealing. He has come back from it, and the film is called Confronting the Wall. It moves beyond the streets of Rochester to Philadelphia, Brazil, and wherever we go, we find that poverty is a language that is universal, but so is art. In a moment, I'll tell you when and where you can see the film. But first, let me go ahead and introduce my guest for the hour. Sean Dunwoody is here, artist, entrepreneur, director of the Fruit Belt Project. Nice to see you here. I was going to say wear so many other hats, but you're not wearing a hat. It's like the first time I've seen you not wearing a hat coming in.
That is correct. I wanted to have my head be able to breathe, my hair to breathe this summer. How about that?
Nice to see you, Sean. Thank you for being here. Chris Christopher is here. Christine Christopher is the producer and writer for Blue Sky Project Films, Confronting the Wall. Chris, nice to have you back here.
Thank you very much.
David Marshall is producer and director for the Blue Sky Project Films, Confronting the Wall. David, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And Ephraim Gabray is here, an artist who's a senior at World of Inquiry School. Ephraim, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
I want to start with Sean and your story because as much as I know you, I don't really know you until this film. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I've gotten to know so much more about you. You've become this ubiquitous force in the local art world. You know, you are always upscale, fashion, having fun, this huge personality. But you let your guard down and you take us back in your own history here in a very real way that I think I was not expecting. Mm-hmm. You grew up where?
Oh, I grew up in the city. I grew up on Avenue D is where I actually grew up. Grew up on Avenue D, then moved to Portland and Bay. And, you know, you're a teenage kid. I was tossed out of two high schools. I don't know if I should say their name, but I will. I was tossed out of Edison and East. At the time, there was a Josh Lofton school, and that they were like, no, you're just not even going to go there. You're just not going to make it in school. And I was like, okay. I had to get my GED. I was already a dad as well at the time. So it's like, oh, man, what's life going to do? How do I take care of my children? How do I take care of life? The next best thing to do, I don't have much of an education. I don't have too many skills. So I did a little bit of slinging on the corner. So I could tell you where my spot was. It was a corner store in the corner of Bay.
What did you sell?
I sold a weed initially. Then I experimented a bit with crack cocaine. That didn't move well.
It didn't move well.
No, it didn't move well.
Okay.
It didn't move well. The pre-cook didn't work for some reason. I don't know why. and I did sold some dimes of cocaine. Did do that. It was in a gate. For those people out there who know what that is, Walt. If you're listening to me, bro, I love you, man. I love you. Walt was the cat who had an apartment up above on Bay. He actually graduated, went to Brockport, and he used to tell me. He said, "You don't want this life. You don't want to be here." As they sat around and cooked up the cocaine, watching another cat in the corner, you know, doing heroin. Literally, these things are going on.
And you're how old? And when was this here?
I'm 17.
You're 17 years old.
Yeah, 17 years old. Okay. So these things are actually happening, but there was still the back side of me, which is the front side of me now. Does that make any sense? The artist side. I was always a creative person. I was always wanted to be engaged in the arts and creative. So my elementary school years, I went to parochial school. St. Stanislaus Kostka, my Polish people out there, actually did a project in Poland, and St. Stanislaus helped support that as well, a mural project. And then I went to high school. I was bored, wanted to do things creative. You know, things happen, dogs in school, fires, all kinds of stuff. I won't go into detail.
That's why you got thrown out?
There's a long list. There's a long list of other reasons why, which I could have probably gone to jail for harassment and various other things of teachers and staff. But so I took the curiosity that tossed me out, but I was still creative. And so, you know, even hanging out, I still had, at the time we had an airbrushed and painted pants. I had my pants on, or I'd have a rhinestone studded Band-Aid on. Who the heck was a rhinestone studded Band-Aid? But I took the time to do that. Chicken bones around my neck for those people who remember that. Even tying my belt, my clothes up with rope. I was just trying to be creative and express myself. So while I'm out there, you know, we're hanging with cats, and I'm hanging with the cats, and we talk and doing our thing. They're like, man, what's up with you? You just ain't looking right. You don't need to be out here. What's going on?
So hold on. I got to jump in here and say, The story you're telling right now, you expressed in the film, and I thought this was a remarkable moment. You talk about slinging drugs with other people who were telling you on the street, you shouldn't be selling drugs, you should be in art.
Yes.
I thought that was amazing because it's your story, but it also humanized other people who are selling drugs because we tend to, as Chris Christopher and I were talking about for the program, paint with a broad brush. We assume, oh, well, you know, worthless drug dealers, the way we talk about people, those are human beings. And they saw in you a very human talent. They didn't want you out there with them selling drugs.
That's correct, because everyone could tell, you got talent, bro. When I walk up with my pants on, painted up, like, all right, this is skill. And everybody, hey, I want you to draw a picture of my mama and all these kind of things. So there was always there was actually a push from the corner to leave the corner.
Wow.
That's why even now as I, you know, when I come across people as adults, they're like, man, you always had it in you. You always had that skill. I'm glad. He said, you're repping the block, you're making me proud. A lot of people have said that. So fast forward, now what I, how I want to engage with individuals is to be the person I wanted to see when I was 17. I didn't see the guy that was out there painting or employing young people or really expressing himself and wasn't afraid to express himself. So now I try to create a path that I become what I wanted to see so that in some way, shape, or form, I can influence someone to continue to beautify our city and our world.
And there's one other question I want to get into before we really delve into the film and how it came together and when you can see it. There's a moment where, I don't want to misquote you, you're either talking about yourself or what kids are being told now, but essentially it's the system tells you that this is not, that you don't have a path, that the system is signaling roadblock. Whether it was you or other kids now who are growing up the way you did, you feel that way?
Yes, I do. There were many times in my adolescent life, teenage life, young adult life, where it's there's always a barrier. But being the creative people that we are, barriers are nothing but a new way to go around it. So I think that philosophy, that thought process is sometimes misunderstood as defiant or non-compliant or you just don't want to, follow the rules. But we've learned as a people or in certain areas of town and in our lives that we have to go around these barriers, and we're going to find the most creative way that we can do that. So if it is, and I'm not condoning it, but if it is selling a product, just as pharmaceutical companies do, we're going to figure that way around this barrier that stops me from a particular type of employment or education. So there are other ways around it. So what I want to show now and how I try to use the barrier, at the wall, shall I say? Can I say the wall? I try to use the wall as an example of how to confront the wall, use the wall, and then go around it.
When's the first time you realized art was in you?
When was
it? How young were you?
Young was I? Okay, I'll make this a brief story, which someone actually pulled this out of me, which I thought was fantastic. I was about 5 years old. I'm a big fan of Spider-Man, okay? And so I had a cassette tape case, and I crushed these spiders up in there. You know, I collect them out of the cobwebs. And I had a sewing needle, and I had a plug that I cut the tip off. So my idea was to create radioactive spider blood and inject myself. Luckily, my mom caught me, and I was like, okay, this is crazy. So later on, I started, you know, mimicking the comic book artists that I enjoyed and painting their work and reproducing what they did from Spider-Man to Hulk to Superman. And I realized I can be a superhero on paper. And then that translated into walls, and that translated into the canvas of the city of Rochester itself. So even though I can't leap from a tall building from a single bound, doggone it, if you give us a skyjack, we'll take care of it.
Sean Dunwoody is an artist and entrepreneur, director of the Fruit Belt Project, and you're going to hear his story and the way it's not only impacted our community, but it just dovetails with this kind of experience in so many places around the world. Art and poverty really don't need a language, and the film is confronting the wall. It's going to be featured in a segment on Arts in Focus on WXXI-TV. That's tomorrow night, and then it's going to premiere on WXXI Monday. That's the 12th, this coming Monday, 9 p.m. Set your DVRs or watch it live Monday at 9 o'clock. It's also going to be screened for free at the MAG, the Memorial Art Gallery, on October 7th. Chris Christopher, when did this come together? What's the vision for this? How did this happen?
Well, it really started with a project, a Blue Sky Project Films called Peaceworks. And I'm going to let Dave speak to Peacework, and then I'll come back and tell you a little more about this film.
Yeah, Peaceworks, we started about 7 years ago, and it's a series of short films looking at grassroots peace building. So we were really interested in things that are coming out of community. The idea was to create 5 to 7 minute films. And we've done this now. You know, we've been in Israel, we filmed there, we filmed in Costa Rica, we've been around the United States, looking at how do you solve problems and how are problems solved by people within the issue, as opposed to something coming in from outside with some, you know, pre-baked idea. And we found some fascinating stories. And I've known Sean for a long time. I don't know, a couple decades. So I knew eventually we would work on something together because he's such a creative powerhouse. And we thought initially that this would be a great piece for Peaceworks, that we would do a short film. And so in 2014, we started filming. And you were working with, who was it? I can't remember now. Ibera.
Ibera, yeah. And that's Ibera. Where Karina was.
Yeah, exactly right. And so we started filming there, and I realized that it was a much more interesting story than would like go into a five-minute film. But I also realized that we had some issues filming because I was getting a lot of people's backs. So I had to kind of decide, how are we going to do this? How are we going to tell this story and still make it creative and interesting and fun? So then jumped to the following year, and Sean got a grant. So we decided to hold off and wait till 2015 when he had the grant to do this project. And that's really how this whole thing sort of jumped off.
Okay. And Chris, do you want to pick it up from there?
Yeah. So Dave called me and said, I'm working with this ubiquitous art figure in town named Sean Dunwoody. Do you know him? And I said, heck, I know him. I've worked with him. And to use Sean's own words, to me, he's a superhero, not only with the quality and the quantity of the work he does, but the projects that Sean and I had done in the past involved working with young people, specifically with young adults in the same age group as this project. And I knew firsthand and close up how gifted he was in working with these kids. So Dave and I started talking about this film, and the idea came up that what was happening with these kids was not just an experience that was unique to them alone, but it was an opportunity to look at a wider scale on how art offers young people growing up in stressed circumstances an opportunity to go someplace else, whether it's geographically, creatively, spiritually, emotionally, or even just to a place of respite. And we started looking at who else we could talk to about this experience. And of course, Rochester is the home to Wall Therapy. It's the home to the FUA crew. So we were quite certain that we would be able to find artists who would be able to speak to their life experience in a way that paralleled what was going on with these young people and build a larger theme around that. And then something entirely unexpected happened. Shall I talk about that?
Yeah, sure.
When we were doing Confronting the Wall, when we were taping down in the subway with the FUA crew for the B-Boy Barbecue, we ran into a Brazilian artist, Eder Munoz, whose work is in many places around Rochester. I think his work is quite recognizable, even if his name is not. And Eder said, why don't you come to Brazil? And we said, why not? And so we did. And we ended up taking as many members of the crew as, frankly, we could afford to take with us to Brazil. And we ended up in a situation that I don't think even we foresaw. I thought we were going to go there, we were going to do a mural with Eder, that he maybe would bring a couple of people in. But lo and behold, what Eder had set up was, in his home city of Salvador, was really the equivalent of a mini wall therapy. We worked with 14 or 15 mm-hmm. other artists and did a magnificent 100-meter wall in a very depressed neighborhood in Salvador. And it was an extraordinary experience. And let me back up. One of the things about filmmaking is you go into it with an idea. You go into it with a story. You go into it with a theme. But one of the most interesting things is being open to where the film is going to take you. We certainly didn't think it was going to take us to Brazil. But more than that, I didn't realize it was going to take us to an experience that we saw replicated in Philadelphia and in Rochester, where no matter where we were, what neighborhood we were in, what language people spoke, that the art had the exact same effect, and the neighbors were reacting in the exact same way. Nobody cared about this neighborhood before. What are you doing here? Why do you think that this is important to do? And thank you so much for doing this. In fact, when we were in Brazil, a young father brought his son over, and Sean got him painting. I mean, it was just, it's just been a remarkable experience to see how art tears down these walls, the walls that poverty builds, the walls that are around neighborhoods, and then, of course, you know, the metaphor for poverty, but also, in this case, the actual wall that the artists confront.
You have this great scene right at the start of the film of the sort of the canvas of that long wall in Brazil, but then you transport us right back to Rochester, and the viewer's going, how are we going from Rochester to Brazil? So you're
Same
getting a sense for that,
here.
How it comes together. The film is confronting the wall, and you're hearing the people behind it this hour. Again, you can see it on Monday on WXXI-TV at 9 p.m. this coming Monday night. It's also going to be screened on October 7th at the Memorial Art Gallery, and hope you'll check it out. The Fruit Belt project that Dave Marshall was referencing, Sean Dunwoody, for you, what's the short explanation for what the Fruit Belt Project is?
Fruit Belt Project was taking a group of young people, Eve from over here as well, included in that, to the Josana neighborhood, trying to rebrand it, rebuild it. We painted two large-scale murals on two large buildings on the corner of Grape and Jay. And the Fruit Belt ties into the early immigrants planting fruit trees. And so we wanted to connect that name back to the neighborhood, drawing from Grape, Lime Street, and rebranding the neighborhood. We created a garden. We've created a seltzer. It's just taking what was at the time the seventh most dangerous neighborhood in the world, and can we get the community engaged, and can we change the identity, and can we get the neighborhood involved in this whole process? It was amazing. We had a big paint out throughout the day, which just started off very cold and rainy. We had about close to 250, 300 people come out from different parts of Rochester, come out and paint, which was fantastic. And when going out to get the canvassing to get them to come, I asked no one for money. I just said, I just want your hands, because it's much more valuable to have your person there than your purse right now. That's really how we're going to shape this community.
And I've got a brief clip from that section of the film with Sean driving us around that neighborhood. This is him. If you haven't been there and you don't really know what he's referring to, listen to the way he describes it, not just as, well, it's a rougher part of town. Listen to some of the actual specifics into the kind of neighborhood Sean is helping to revitalize.
Some of the things that are going on in this neighborhood is seventh most dangerous neighborhood in the nation. As far as the state, it's one of the highest, high density of poverty in the state. It's like at the top five. It's got the largest number in New York State of single female-led or women-led homes, you know, single moms in the state. I mean, there's a lot going on in this neighborhood. There's a third white, third black, a third Latino. It has nothing to do with race. It has to do with poverty. It has to do with people with lost opportunities. It has to do with people who need some support. It has nothing to do with one skin color, what's going on in this neighborhood.
That's Sean talking about it. And then you see him trying to sort of drum up that support, talking to students, going about that process. And you even admit at one point that there are mornings you wake up and you're tired, and it's hard for you because people see you in public and you are this force of energy. I did not know there was a vulnerable side to you that occasionally is tired, that occasionally hits your own kind of a wall. But you found people. Take me again through that process of trying to do. You could not do that on your own.
No, I can. It takes many hands and many people to build a community, to even take on a project. I have to commend Dave on that. Just back to the film. He made me realize how much it actually took to get this project off the ground. I was like, I didn't understand it. I was like, man, I'm feeling tense and anxious. I was like, this is a lot going on to always be on. But yes, there's some downtime. There were so many community partners who were engaged in this. College Club of Beverage, Food Link, Stop One Market, Wasim. There were so many, and I'm naming people who are directly in the neighborhood. There were so many parts and players to this. I wish I had a list. I should have brought a list. It even extended out to other schools. World of Inquiry. We got to thank Sherwin Williams. Helped move a lot of things forward. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Ooh. Here and Brazil.
Yes, here and Brazil. Thank you, Pat, at Sherwin Williams. They connected. They supported the project here, the Fruit Project here, Fruit Belt Project here. contacted Brazil, set us up with paint to paint these walls and get people engaged. So they were actually dedicated to community, and they weren't really concerned about so much about the press or publicity behind it. They were just like, go do something because we believe in that vision or believe in that goal. So there were so many people. Chris was there's just so I can't I wish oh man I wish I had a list, but it requires a lot of talking and a lot of action on other people's part. I had to sit down, let's say I sat down with you, had a conversation, and what I was trusting is that you would go out and mention it to two other people. Those two other people would tell six other people. Those six people would tell 12, and sort of this telephone game of spreading the word about the Food Belt Project. That's literally how it got along. There was no big media blitz, no advertising agency behind it. It was the people of Rochester that believed in this project and that it could be done and that spread the word. And I have to thank those who participated and those who made this project happen. I say thank you. I love you.
Number of people on Twitter just listening, responding. You can follow along at Evan Dawson or MMAC Media, Matt and others, and just asking how many spaces and where can they see the kind of work that was done.
Meaning, okay, well, they're in the Jay and Grape.
Yeah.
And we did work throughout the state of Rochester. Just part of the whole program of the Food Belt and how now I reinterpret it is about planting life in other areas. Hence is why we end up in Brazil, planting new life, which is a great movement. But throughout the city of Rochester, my team did murals all over on Park Avenue. If any of you have ever seen the Greetings from Rochester, that's my young team, because they're like, hey, we don't only work in a distressed neighborhood. We work in another neighborhood, and
public
we can bring
market.
Light. Yes, public market. We can bring light and life to any neighborhood working with the residents and community.
I would point out, too, that some of the pieces that our young artists at Ephraim and Coquinas worked with one of the most renowned graffiti artists in the world, mural artist in the world, Days.
Yeah, absolutely. I was watching on Netflix, The Get Down, and it's an excellent TV movie series or whatever. But the trains they had on, it was a real trains, and I seen Days' work, and I was going crazy. I just had to throw that in.
Yeah, I saw one just the other day, too. I was really surprised. We were down taking a picture of Sean. But there's on Joseph Avenue, there's that beautiful piece of the young girl dreaming. It's huge. It's building size. And Ephraim and Coquinas worked with Days on that. One of the pieces that is, I think, one of the most photographed from the last year of wall therapy is the one at the public market of the big woman's head with the owl on the top. Okay. That's on the over near where the buildings are, where the coffee shop is, and Cure over there. And our young artist Kari worked with Jeff Soto and Max 242 on that one. Karina and Aziza were integral to the Greetings from Rochester piece. It's over by Parkley. And then if you go down in the subway, my absolute favorite piece that the Fruit Belt crew did with our other friend DJ. David Johnson is actually a portrait of the five of them that's up in the subway. It's an absolutely wonderful, fanciful, colorful, fun piece that shows each and every one of them, Ephraim, Coquinas, Aziza, Karina, and Kari at their best down in the subway.
The Fruit Belt Titans, which hasn't been buffed out yet.
It hasn't been buffed out,
and I see people actually saying this is one of my favorite
pieces.
It's
been a year.
Yeah.
And none of those have been touched, though. One of the Biba barbecues.
Okay.
Ephraim, when did you meet Sean Dunwoody?
I met him. It would be 2 years ago, right? I don't know. A year or two ago.
How'd you meet him?
He came to my school. I wasn't even supposed to be in the class. I wasn't supposed to be in Miss Davis's class, English class. But I don't know. I saw this guy, and I just walked in. You know, she likes me, so I just walked in and sat down, and I was listening to his pitch, and I think he had the GoFundMe on the screen or whatever, and he was talking about the neighborhood and how it was impoverished and stuff like that. And it was my first job, so I was like thinking, okay, it's like a good, I'm doing something for the community, I'm getting money as well. So I was like, okay, cool, sure. And he already had somebody lined up for the job, but I mean, I was just chasing the money. So I kept on.
That's okay. Sean said several times in the film he loved being able to tell him, yeah, you're going to get paid too.
So yeah, he came and he did the pitch, and I enjoyed his character, and he ended up bringing me on board.
But you had such a transformation. It may have started out for you just for the money.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't like art. Like the year before that and stuff. I went to art, you know, I passed art and stuff like that, but I never was really into it. So I came into it, you know, we were in a DJ studio in Hungerford, and just sitting there brainstorming and talking and stuff like that, and it occurred to me, it's not like a job, it's like a kind of a family type of thing, like learning from each other and stuff like that, so.
But he's not telling the whole story here. He went on to get another job so he could continue to take art lessons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then another quite well-known wall artist here, Rick Mudo. Tell that story.
Yeah, definitely. So when I stopped working with Sean for the summer, it got chilly out. I started taking classes from Olivia Kim, a sculptor. And then after that, she actually, you know, I wasn't working at the time. I was in my junior year. I was like in the middle of the year. I wasn't really working. But she connected me with Rick Mudo. And then I did like a three, four-month internship with him, which was excellent. The mural is in the village of Brockport. And so I'm just trying to like keep art in my life, you know, something that makes me happy, something productive.
If I would have told you 2 years ago, Ephraim, that this is what you wanted to do, that you were putting this much of your energy into art, 2-3 years ago, what would you have said?
Absolutely not. And it's absolutely not. You know, it's crazy. It's like Sean said before, I want to be that person that you know. I'm young now, so I'm like his age, but I still want to be that person for someone younger than me, you know, to look up to and confide in, and you know, just give good advice.
Absolutely.
No, but you don't need the radioactive spider blood to do that. Just
That is the best story ever, by the way. I just want to go back to that. If you missed that earlier, we're going to put it in Weekend Connections, the podcast, because it's one thing to love Spider-Man, but it's another to be 5-6 years old and think, how can I be Spider-Man? That is very creative.
But, you know, Evan, the wonderful thing for me was these five young people that Sean had identified absolutely lived what was the theme of this film. That Kokinas, in addition to being a fine artist, he actually does a lot of beautiful drawing. He's a poet. The two young women, absolutely involved in their art, and Kari, who was with us, had been an artist for quite a long time, and it was actually quite a remarkable experience for him because for many years he had been drawing owls, and he got partnered up with Jeff Soto and Max 242, and what are they doing? A piece on owls. So it was just really wonderful to see what had started on for Dave and I is what we thought was a really great working concept to just really come to life and blossom through these young people.
I think, too, that the film, you know, it doesn't really touch on this directly, but the idea of experiential learning, that taking things out of the classroom and bringing them into the world, and that's what Sean does so beautifully, is he's taking people into the world of being an artist and saying, this is very practical and real, and you can do this, and you can do this in your community. And he did that with these young people, but he also involved the community themselves. They can be engaged. So the idea of having a real experience, you know, not a virtual experience, but a real experience. And it also, I think, shows how difficult that is. It's easy to talk about experiential learning and taking people out into the world, but it's a complicated endeavor. And Sean worked very, very hard to get these kids to have a great experience and to then keep growing it and growing it. So we went from, like we said, Rochester to Philadelphia so we could build on this so that they had a really meaningful summer. And that's what, for me, that's one of the things that I take from this film that I really enjoy, is the idea that this was incredibly meaningful and it was hard work that sort of panned out.
Well, we've got a couple questions from listeners, which we're going to get to after our only break of the hour, on some subjects in terms of relationships built. And so Alexis, Mark, going to get to your questions after this short break. You just heard David Marshall, Christine Christopher. They're both here from Blue Sky Project Films, Confronting the Wall. And Sean Dunwoody is here, his story and his work depicted in that film. Ephraim Gebre is here, who's an artist who might not have known he's an artist, but he is now. All of these remarkable stories in the film Confronting the Wall, which you can see Monday night on WXXI-TV at 9 p.m. It's also going to be screened for free at the Memorial Art Gallery on October 7th. All right, I'm going to get to your questions after this short break. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, new research into fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And we'll meet a couple of parents and hear about their experiences. Then in our second hour, Nazareth College President Don Braveman joins us. We're elaborating on what he recently said on the program about the cost of college. He says the actual cost has gone up less than 2% a year for decades now. What's the reality when it comes to the cost of college? Talk with you Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mark writes to the program and wants to know about whether the art that they created is being covered up over time. And I assume he means covered up in various different ways. Sean, does that happen?
There are some murals that are going to be buffed out or painted over. That's part of the process or part of the movement of public art. You expect it to grow and move with the public. So sometimes it does bring a tear to the eye. And sometimes you're like, oh God, I'm glad that's gone. But there's but it's part of the process of change and evolution of public art.
I feel like that's the beautiful part about it. Because I did a piece in the subway, and you know, I felt like I was really proud of it. And I went down there, and then it was you know, covered up by some shenanigans, you know. So I was like, wow. I mean, it broke my heart, but I was like, yeah, that's the beauty of art. It's not gonna last forever. So because you know, subway's evolving place.
But
so.
Ephraim, do you ever put together a piece in the public space and think, all right, I know it's going to be covered up, but it's been like 48 hours. Could you guys wait just a little? Does that ever happen?
I go to the subway like, you know, probably once or twice every 2 weeks. So it's never like I go back to back unless I leave a piece half finished. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it's covered up by something good, I mean, who cares? You know what I mean?
The broader question comes from Alexa. She just wants to know about the relationships you guys built with other cities and if those are going to last. It's a broad question. I'll let you guys tackle it however you want to.
I think Brazil will, for sure, because yeah. Eder's coming here, I think, this fall to work again on a piece of art here, and he's going to work with you, I assume, Sean. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're hoping that the Brazil relationship will continue to grow.
Yeah, it actually those relationships have carried on through social media, and we're actually communicating on Facebook and on WhatsApp. Philadelphia, I talked to Demetrius, who's the man who's in the film. He's actually engaged. We talk every so often. He knows about the project and what's happening. So everywhere we've landed, we've tried to create a connection. Even the, as you mentioned earlier, the young man and his son, we're actually connected
Benjamin?
Now. Yes, we're in Benjamin. We're actually connected now on Facebook, and he's like, "Hey, it was good to see you." These kind of things are still there. So I think it really worked. It was beneficial to be in these areas and to be present and attentive. I think what I try to instill in these young guys, and I hope that Dave and Chris capture this in the film, is that we're not coming to say, look at what I can do. Look at what we can do. Look at what we're good at. It's not about what we're good at. It's about what the community's good at as a whole, as a body.
I think it's also interesting and important maybe to note that through the efforts of this project, these five young people have entered a community. They're now part of something that's much larger than Rochester, and they have connections outside of the city that they could always build on. I mean, we know 14 artists in Brazil, and through their connections with some of the artists from Wall Therapy, if any of them wanted to go to a city and say, I'm here now, remember we met, they would be welcome with open arms. And that's a very powerful and a very special thing, a very special thing.
Ephraim, you want to comment on that? But the relationships that you've been able to build with this?
Yeah, definitely. Just meeting people, you know, in Brazil and here, I've learned to try to maintain relationships, you know, maintain like professional relationships, and always be looking for more opportunities, you know, through the opportunities that you get. You know what I mean? Just keep it moving.
David,
one of the conversations that we captured in the film, which I really like, is when Ephraim and Sean are up on the, you know, the, what is it called, Sean?
The lift.
The lift. Thank you. And they're talking about Ephraim's talking about. You know, he didn't think that this was that big a deal until people started talking to him about how much of a big deal it was. And Sean's response, which I thought was wonderful, was he said, you know, it's not the painting that matters. It's the being here. Yeah. It's the being here every day doing this that really matters. That's the message, is that you're here every day caring about this wall. And that's the message you're sending to this community, is that we're here and we care. And I thought that was a really powerful lesson. And then Ephraim said, I'm too tired to hear that today.
just cut me off, too. I was just telling him about that in the car. I was like, man, you just cut me off.
I think we were joking, and it got deep, and I was just like, dude, I don't know.
You're not ready for something deep right now?
It was a long day. I think it was cold that day.
It was like 40 degrees, and we're raining.
But I agree with Dave 100%. You know, it's not just like we're out there like working hard, but it's like it's more like a labor of love. In order to make a difference, you can't just be there doing it, like, you know, just to get a paycheck. You gotta be like, you gotta love the community, and you gotta actually care.
Yeah, because go ahead, Chris.
I was gonna say, once you start a project like this, a lot of people are counting on you.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, everybody in that neighborhood is counting on you to continue, to finish, to make them feel good, to, you know, leave something that's lasting and beautiful. So there's, you know, to me, it's more than just showing up. Mm-hmm. It's fulfilling a responsibility once you take it on.
Have we said already that you know, that the messages that are on the walls come from the community? Have we talked about that?
No, it's a good point.
Okay, that's really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, so part of the initiative, besides just painting the buildings, matching these fruit band colors, we actually went to the community residents, whether they're passing by, we go to a meeting and ask, what do you want to say to this neighborhood? This is your neighborhood. What are the messages you want to send? A classic moment is a young man, Luis, skateboards up and down the street. He's not young. But one day, Kari asks him, hey, what would you want to say? And he says, I want people to pray for my neighborhood, pray for the neighborhood. And Kari says, all right, good, we're going to do that. So what we did is we put pray on the wall, and by the side we put Luis. A few days went by, and that piece was actually vandalized. It was. Wow. It was tagged. But it was tagged by Luis. He signed his name. He wanted ownership and wanted to be part of it, and he felt very proud of it. And that was a fantastic moment. I was like, yep, we're going to leave it there. That's great. Thank you, Luis. So it's like really having people invested a particular thing, going to Philadelphia and talking to Demetrius and saying how he had to be invested in the neighborhood, how it actually tipped. Two Dutch artists came in and worked on the Philly Painting Project. They lived there for 2 years before they even painted. They did barbecues, hung out, so people, you would know the people and the people would know them. So you're on this first name basis. We tried to do the same thing when we did the Fruit Belt Project in Jay. The short amount of time we were in Brazil, we tried to do the same thing. Be invested. Be there. There's a point where Ephraim and I are actually painting in the rain. It is pouring down, but it's like, we've got to do this, Ephraim.
Beautiful scene.
Because there was a part where I'll just give some background why we did it, because Etter, love you to death, he was nervous about the transition between the piece, the whole theme of the mural in Brazil was about nature and its beauty, and what we did was put the words que beleza, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly for my Portuguese speakers, and it means how beautiful, what beauty. So it was all encased in these big large letters. So there was a transition that wasn't sitting
very sharp
transition that wasn't sitting well with Etter, and I like, we'll take care of it. And the rain was a perfect opportunity, and I was like, we're gonna do it.
It was a beautiful. I liked it. You know, usually we run from the rain. Mm-hmm. You know, it was nice to embrace it.
And I think it was good to show that we really cared about this piece. It wasn't just, no, we just want some accolades to put something up. No, we care. We want this transition to flow. We want everyone to feel comfortable how we're working together.
Well, Sean, you opened the door to what for me turned out to be a wonderful story and a wonderful coincidence. The two Dutch artists who did the Philly Paint Project, who really, you know, spent a lot of time creating relationships there before they did that project. Before they did the Philly Paint Project, their original project was in, drumroll please, Brazil. So we went from a project inspired by artists who had originated a project in Brazil, in Philadelphia, brought that to Rochester, and then took our Rochester connection and took it to Brazil. So it just felt like it was meant to be.
It was Haas and Han. That's who it is. Haas and Han. Those are the two artists. I don't want to exclude their names out of the whole process.
Let me grab a phone call. I'm going to go down to Naples. Joe? Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
I want to say that I'm super supportive of all this stuff. I feel like, you know, sometimes art needs to be kind of forced into people's lives to make them not even just kind of address it, you know, feel something that they don't necessarily take the time to do. And I think that we're all artists in our own way. So I love it. And I also saw a piece down on the subway entrance that was like this lettering for this promotion of a music festival. And it was like lettering and it kind of stuck on the wall. And I wanted to see what the young artists thought about that. Down there,
I definitely seen it. I forgot what it said, but I remember that it's ripped down now. But I remember seeing it. I really didn't know what it was about. I mean, it was a cool piece. It was like different colors, 3D. I thought it was awesome. I'm wondering how they got it up there, but I don't really know what it was about.
Ladders and glue.
Yeah. Ladders and
chairs. Sounds like somebody who might have had a hand in that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to see what you guys are down there, like, making it happen down there, what you kind of thought of it. It was, like, a little different, like, more sculpture.
Yeah. I thought it was...
See, I want to see this piece. It's gone?
It's gone.
Who are the writers that did this? Who are the... Do you know?
Nicole Abraham and Joe and myself, Joe Shank. Mm-hmm. I have a music festival down in Naples called the Purple Pig.
Oh, Purple Pig.
Yeah, I see Purple Pig stuff all the time. What's up, Joe?
Yeah, what up?
All right, man. All right, I see. So who does the prints that you do? Do you do those as well? The posters, you do those as well?
Yeah, we didn't. Nicole designed the posters, the handbills. We did some stickers this year. We're trying to do some different promotional tactics. Which is never, I'm not very traditional in any of my thinking, so it's I get a lot of flack from you need to do it this way and put it in people's face. And I'm like, well, no, I want to start a discussion. And I want to help people remember it. And
that's key.
And I'm a big, the whole festival is about local music, local food, local people, and
sweet.
And art. And I feel like the fat kid with the notebook.
Well, here we go. Here's
Now you got it. He's the kid.
Hey, Joe. Question. Joe.
Yeah.
You got to contact WXXI and try and get on here with connections with Evan and see if you can talk more about Purple Pig. It sounds interesting as all heck, man.
So we did a play. We did a play this year. We wrote.
All right.
A play, and Nicole did a whole gallery, all local artists. It was great. I mean, that was the kind of
cool.
People need to. Yeah. It was good.
And thank you, Joe, for building community down in Naples throughout the Rochester.
Thank you guys for supporting something that is so necessary in this day and age.
And keep pasting up. Keep pasting up, bro. Keep pasting up.
Joe raises a larger point, though, that I think is something that is really valuable to talk about, and that's the idea of bringing art to the people, not waiting for people to come to the art. And with this particular art form, wall art, over the years, a lot of people have really not respected it or really valued it for what it is. You know, people talk about graffiti, and what they're really talking about is not graffiti in the sense that that's letter form art, but that something that looks vandalized. I mean, that's what people think of as graffiti.
Yeah, right.
And I think that thanks to Wall Pit Therapy and thanks to them for their help with this project, I mean, they were really, Ian Wilson and Eric Lehman were wonderful in helping us make connections to other artists, and we thank them for that. But because we have wall therapy in this community.
And FUA.
And for that, there is a much greater appreciation for this as an art form that doesn't need to exist within the four walls, that art can exist outside of the four walls, and bringing that art to people who may not be in a place where they're going to pay to go to a gallery or feel like a gallery setting is going to be welcoming to them. This is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Okay. Well, do you want to rant on that, Ephraim? You agree?
As far as the emotional connection to the piece, I was watching the documentary on YouTube, and it was saying it's just tags, but when in New York City, when they see one on the trains, they get happy, your name is somewhere, and I can personally identify with that, because when I see a piece, it's kind of like an emotional feeling, you're there, you know what I mean, so. Yeah, it has an emotional weight to it.
I think one of the things that Max talks about is that art was a way for him to survive in a very complicated space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a lot of what we're finding from many of the artists, really, who are doing wall art, is that this was a way in which they could express themselves in a safe way. We heard that from the people from FUA as well. Mm-hmm. And then slowly it evolved for them into something that became more than just a personal expression, but a career,
mm-hmm.
or a way to make a living, which was fascinating to watch. And that was true for probably three or four of the people we spoke to in the film, that they started off as just something inside that they had to get out and became for them a way of life.
Well, let me just get a couple more questions. And Derek writes to the program and just wants to know, what's the status of the subway? I don't know the answer to that. Ephraim?
Yeah. There's a lot of carrying crates down there. I don't know if that's what you call them, but I mean, half of the subway is in pretty good condition, and then when you go all the way down, it's kind of sandblasted. I don't know, but it's crumbling, stuff like that. So it's a very fresh wall, so I started doing stuff on that wall. So.
But are they?
Yeah, it is slated for development.
Yeah, it is slated for development.
It's gonna happen.
It's gonna happen.
Despite some of the pushback from the artistic community.
There has been a beacon, a little peak of light in connection to the library when I talked to Patricia over there. Ways to actually, I don't know if I can actually talk about this, but ways to have that subway still be part of Rochester's.
There's going to be an access point that's going to remain at one end.
That's good because it is.
Breaking news here? Is this breaking?
As long as you can.
I don't think so. I think it's been in the paper. Yeah, I think that's how I know it.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's how I know.
Well, following your program, we sat and talked about it at the library.
I'm with you. No, there are times though where I'm in a haze. You know, so, Derek, sorry I couldn't answer that question. Dave, did you want
to? No, I was just going to say that it's a pity to get rid of something like that, because it's a really wonderful, interesting, and unique space that Rochester has for people to work and enjoy. So, yeah, if it is going to be developed, it's too bad.
Well, but people should go down and take a look at it while they can, because in addition to all of the Rochester artists, a huge number of the wall therapy artists that have come in have gone down into the subway and put in pieces of their own. There are some remarkable, remarkable pieces down there.
As Kari mentioned in the film, that art can't be contained inside certain walls and it expands out. So writers are going to write either way, whether you have a subway or not, whatever canvas you're going to take away, there's going to be a new one presented. So the art and love affair with creating public art is not going to die anytime soon.
All right, one more email. Jill just writes to the program and says, Evan, thanks for bringing art into the discussion again. In this case, though, I have to feel a bit of pity, if that's the right word, for our community, because there are people like Sean who might be able to make a living, but there are so many others who will love art but will find that they cannot find a way to get paid or at least support themselves as full-time artists. I wish that could change. Don't know how to make that change. That's from Jill.
Like, I myself have been thinking about the same thing. Like, I went to the Clothesline Festival, me and Sean, and I think Karina was. And I was going around, I bought a couple of things, I was talking to the artists, you know, like, how do you make a living doing this? And most of them say, oh, I do computer programming and stuff like that. And I did an internship with Rick, he's a fine artist. And but he has other aspects to his business. Like, he runs a gallery, and he has furniture, he sells furniture out of the gallery, acts some galleries on. Mm-hmm. I forgot what street it is, but
Anderson,
yeah. So I've been thinking about all that, and I'm thinking about Sean. Like, he has large scale stuff, so I feel like that's why, you know, it's more profitable and more people get to see it in their cars. They don't have to stop anymore.
Are you discouraged as a young artist though, knowing that it's tough to make a living with something? Does that discourage you from pursuing your skills in something?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Sean? I would like to say to Jill, this isn't the only hat I wear. I have to juggle a lot, as you said. I bounce around in many different arenas. Just right now, I'm on discussing this. So, to anyone trying to push forward, there's a lot of sacrifice involved in anything in life, in anything you want to achieve. You know, people think, you know, oh wow, you got this football player, or basketball player's got this $4 million contract. Not understanding that it took them day after day, night after night, to learn how to throw this ball. In the rain, in the snow, in the cold. So it takes the time and effort. Just stick to it. And it's okay if that's something that you do part-time as well. It doesn't remove your spirit. It doesn't remove your love for the art. It will eventually find itself in you when you seek it. So to Jill and everyone else trying to pursue things out there, just keep doing it. Just do some stuff. I was going to swear on air. Just do some stuff and keep it going. Sorry.
I'm glad. We get a delay, but, you know, but that's all right. So, and I would also just say to Jill, as we've discussed with various members of the art community, you can vote with your wallet, too. Mm. Nothing wrong with buying prints or very famous stuff, but if there are local artists, you know, it's one thing. We've been talking about public art that's different. You know, public art, especially, you know, when you see subway, things like that, you're not going to take that home with you. But you may find that someone like Ephraim or Sean or somebody, maybe they've got some public art, but maybe they have some other pieces, and you can vote with your wallet. And that's something that if we are an arts town, and I think we are.
Yes, we are.
Sometimes you have to vote with your wallet. So, down to just about our last minute here, I want to remind you, we've been talking about Confronting the Wall, which is this new film that is going to be premiering on WXXI-TV this coming Monday. That's the 12th. Monday at 9 p.m. You can watch Confronting the Wall. You can also see it screen for free at the Memorial Art Gallery. That is on October 7th, if you want to mark your calendar. And I'll just ask Chris and Dave, as filmmakers, real briefly here. You get into a project, it's like anything else. And maybe it's like when you get into a painting. It doesn't always end exactly as it started, but, you know, you learn and you enjoy. What's the lesson for you in, from start to finish that maybe you didn't initially see with this, Dave?
Well, I think for me, it's how wonderful the communities in Rochester are. I never have been in that community where we were in the Jazana neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And yet, it's full of wonderful people. I got to meet them, connect with them, and we became friends over the course of making this film. So I think that opened my eyes in that regard.
Okay. Chris Christopher.
Well, I would echo what Dave said, but with this film, as with the other films that Dave and I have made, it always feels like you have raised this child. You know, you brought somebody up, you formed it, you gave it all you had, and then you unleash it on the world. And it goes off and has its own life and hopefully makes its own mark. And I certainly feel that way about this film as I have about the others in the past.
Congratulations on this. Monday night, we'll be watching it. And congratulations to the artist and Sean.
Thank you.
You know, you got big vision, but you get a way of turning that vision into reality, and that is not always easy. So congratulations, and thanks for sharing your story as well. And Ephraim, good luck to you. Nice meeting you here in studio, and I know you, whatever you decide to do, you're going to be doing great things. It's great to see you here.
Thank you.
Thanks to engineer Rob Braden and producer Megan Mack. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks for listening on this Thursday afternoon, and we'll talk with you Friday on member-supported public radio.